Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to another episode of Voices for Excellence. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Connor, CEO and founder of the Agile Evolutionary Group and proud host of VFE. And I have this huge face, smiley face on my face, or smiling on my face, because I have one of my good friends, dear brother, a parent here. Now, listen, he is, right, and when I say this, hey, he's going to get mad when I say this. Listen, this episode is going to be one of those episodes that you're going to have to take out your notebook, get your pen ready, because it is going to be this high-level intellectual banter going back and forth between a person that I admire so much, Max Brooks, who has been in the education space for over 25 years, whether it be, you know, when he was in the education realm, in the PK-12 realm, business education, ed tech. He has expertise in a variety of different verticals. And I lean on him, you know, if I need to know something with regards to the business education space, I just sit down, have my pen out, and just listen to him and learn. That's how much I admire him. We have a lot of projects that we're working together with the Justice League, everybody bringing their individual expertise to make dynamic expertise. But like I said, just one of the amazing educators that has a big heart for kids and really passionate and has a purpose for what he's doing. So it is absolutely my honor to have Max Brooks, the CEO and founder of Think, Do, Learn. Max, the extraordinaire.
I've heard tell that you know how to bring people out, that you know how to be the hype man. I've heard tell of this, but to experience it firsthand is humbling. It's an honor. It's making me blush. Behave, Michael.
Oh, man.
I appreciate you, brother. I'm glad to know you in this work and to be alongside of you as we go and make change, positive change for kids.
Absolutely. Listen, I tell you this, to my audience, Max and I, along with Matt Monjen, as well as Dr. Baron Davis, we have Dr. Lane, who was part of the USDE, former associate secretary. We have a group that we meet every single week. And that meeting, I should say, or meetings that we have, is probably one of the most invigorating learning experiences. Obviously, we have targeted goals of how we want to impact the educational landscape together. But I have my pen out and I'm just learning from a level of experts. That's just sharpening me. As they say, iron sharpens iron. Max is one of those critical friends, those brothers, one of my brothers, one of my good friends who pushes me to the limit. So, you know, having this conversation, being a part of this podcast or this episode, not only am I going to learn, to my audience, you're going to learn from one of what I call him, the education extraordinaire. That's what he's bringing. But Max, this can go this way, right? This can go left very quick, but we're going to stay right on the education focus, because again, to my audience, when we get together, man, time goes
fireworks,
by.
Man. Fireworks.
It's fireworks. I missed something last week because my son is up here, but again, I can't wait to see you, Max. But jumping right into this, right? You know, with your experience, the depth and breadth of your experience in the education space, 25 years from classroom practitioner to department specialist to ed tech leader expert to business education specialist. And then now also to high-level consultant for some of the biggest startups and emerging companies in education. But with your depth of experience in the sector, right? What song describes your excellence in equity work? I can't wait to hear this. When education stakeholders and individuals engage with Max Brooks.
Wow. Song. So, that's a good one. So default, well, I guess the screen is blurred, but I recently got a record player, a big trawler, which is funny because, speaking of father, my wife, two Father's Days ago, got me four LPs for Father's Day. She's like, I know you love music. I got you four records. I was like, babe, that's so awesome. And she picked Stevie Wonder's one. I won't name the other three titles, but I was like, this is amazing. I don't have a record player. So she was like, I know, but you were thinking about the technology. So I figured, like, you do your research and you figure out the exact one. So I finally did and got that. And so Stevie Wonder's Songs in the Key of Life is my favorite album of all time. And my favorite song in an album is the song As, because I always think about how, just despite any and everything that you can imagine, love will prevail and, we'll still be able to love and support one another. So that song always comes to mind just in general is my favorite song. But given the context of the question, man, to give an education, I believe the children are our future. Teach them well. Help them lead the way. I could go with the lyrics, but I'd say the greatest love of all. But Randy Watson version, for those that understand. Randy Watson version, for those that know, they know. I was actually, my son's birthday is around Halloween, so we had a themed party for him last year, and my wife surprised me with an outfit. She had the Randy Watson blue suit, the wig, so I was dressed up as Randy Watson. And so I think that's all, the greatest love of all. If we lean in and support our future, which is our kids, then we'll be okay as a society.
Absolutely. And love that version, right? Love that version. I call that the critical remix, right? The innovative
For
remix.
sure,
But
for sure.
when you think of that, Max, right? Love will prevail, right? I love that precursor to now the greatest love of all, which is around, I believe, the children are the future. Now, when we think about that, right? That song resonates so much, Max, especially now. When we think about the future of the world, future of work, Generation Alpha, Generation Z, that song means so much more and is significant because of the fact that this unknown and uncertain future that we're seeing in education, coupling with these elements of polarization and politicizing education now, how do we continue to have that? I believe the children are the future when we have to defy some of these proxies that are going to inhibit progress. I think that is so critically important. But Max, with your education company, Think Do Learn, right? That is just the level of expertise and the divergency of services that it brings. It is a disruptor, albeit an innovator at the same time. But your expertise and consultation services challenges, and what I love about this, challenges ed tech companies, challenges CEOs, their traditional operating structures and product features, so that now it is equitable, right? There's that grounded root of equity when the product is launched or when the company is launched. But before we get into your work specifically, Max, what is the mission and vision of Think Do Learn, and how are support mechanisms leveraged to achieve, let's say, my company or CEO's company's organizational vision for impact? And I stress that word impact because now, if we believe the children are the future, we have to ensure there's that systemic alignment of impact to be able to get to that vision.
Sure. So the mission of Think to Learn is pretty straightforward and simple. Our mission is to connect communities to the relationships, the technologies, and the services that will support their ability to thrive. Full stop. And the relationships piece of that is really key. I started in LLC in 2011, still in the classroom, still teaching. Here and there, I do a little side hustles, right? Take some time during the summer, a week or so, do some training here or there. So I was doing some work under the umbrella of Think Do Learn many, many moons ago. But at the start of 2024, I kind of rebranded, reemerged. Start of 2024, I re-jump started, I should say. At the start of 2024, I jump started my consultancy again, so that Think Do Learn could have this new intentional focus on what I've come to learn is one of my strengths and skills, which is relationship building. And I feel like even you mentioned the Justice League, you mentioned some of the names of folks that we've come to work together and learn from and with. I don't want to be out here as a solo consultancy trying to, go it alone, making a huge difference in the world. I believe we're stronger together. And so relationships are key. And I think that goes both ways. Even as a consultancy, working together and finding other consultancies for that matter that all have similar missions, are similar focused on helping, the most marginalized of communities. That is important. And I think putting that out there at the forefront, that Think to Learn is not an entity all into itself as an end all be all. Think to Learn is out here looking for other organization entities that are also trying to think and do and learn in ways that support communities' abilities to be successful in ways that they identify. So it's a critical mission. It is one that is a call, if you will, a call in to say who else is looking out here to support communities' ability to thrive. And like we say that word often, and it's like a kind of a catchphrase, but what does that really mean? I think from the company perspective, again, working with companies that want to impact those spaces, that's the work. Go find out. Go into the communities you're looking to impact and find out what is important to those communities. What are the challenges they're trying to overcome? What are the things that they want to do and be able to see in the world? And how can you go and make a difference in ways that don't negatively impact other communities, of course? Because I think we all are one big global community, of course, and we're all progressing through this thing called life. So if we can do it together in ways that are aligned to the success of humankind, then let's do it.
Now, Max, I want to expand upon something, right? Because to my audience, Think Do Learn CEO founder Max Brooks has one of the most successful consultancy organizations in the country. And as you can see, Max focused on two critical pillars, two critical themes. And this is the essence of his company's success. One, there's an intentional focus on relationships. Two, there's an intentional focus on this ethnographic approach of being a part of the community. We didn't hear anything about profit margins. We didn't hear anything about sales approach for the product. We didn't hear anything pertaining to the business aspects of it. When I look at Max's consultancy and company, the reason why it's so successful is around those two pillars. Now, Max, this is a sub question, okay? How that's a huge mindset shift. And I attribute this, and this is just a hypothesis, you being in the PK-12 space for so long, understanding the dimensions of the PK-12 space, bringing it into your consultancy, which is accelerating your success exponentially. How can CEOs and different organizational or company leaders or startups take that intentional focus around relationships and immersing themselves in the community where now their product becomes synergetic to advancing the critical goals of dispelling inequities and disparities within that community?
That's a really big question, but I'll try to make it simple. You can't be what you can't see, right? And that's an old adage. I believe it was Marianne Wright Edelman. I could be misquoting. If so, please go back and edit, and you'll just fill in the gap for who was it said that. But people want to go make a difference, but they haven't done the internal work. At the end of the day, right? You have to do the work. There are people that come into your life for a reason. Some come for a season. But about a little over a year ago, I met brilliant, brilliant, brilliant woman, Dr. Ruby Abobbio Fernandez, and she was a practitioner up in New York City for many years. I think she's since moved on from the DOE and now is doing some work with Glenn Singleton with Courageous Conversations. But I met the sister, and she was just brilliant. And she had a book that was coming out. And she's like, "Oh, I'm an author. Book will be released soon." So later that fall, the book came out. Got my hands on a copy. I met her co-author. Courtney Wilkerson, another brilliant, brilliant woman. And two of them co-wrote this book called Shifting Self and System. There's a subtitle, but I forget the long extended subtitle. But in the book, one of the things they talk about is how, leaders, even CEOs, companies, folks need to work on their own instructional, but also adaptive leadership. What does that mean to really tackle adaptive and dynamic changing challenges that's all we're facing? There's no going back to a time we're going to just relax and, oh, these are the known problems and we're just going to work on them. We are in a state, to your point around AC stage and so forth. We're in a state that there will never be a time we're not facing some new, unprecedented, unheard of challenge. Like every day, turn on the news, like unprecedented, unheard of, right? It's always going to be something. And so the K-12 space is every space. It is. There's no job, there's no career, there's no anything that didn't start with the teacher first. You had to have somebody educating that person that's going to do the thing, whether it's pulling the lever, pushing the button, having thoughts. So whatever it is they're doing, somebody had to work on educating them to get to that ability to do that successfully and effectively. So, you know, we talk about companies that want to embed practices or strategies that, you know, support K-12, first it's go do the work. Go do the research, learn the history, understand what's been going on. I'm going back through, I always skim, I keep it close by. You know, Don Nicholson's Savage Inequality. The state of education in America and in large part in certain places has not shifted. And that's unfortunate because it's been decades. And that is the work that if folks really want to do good work in K-12, and you mentioned profit margins, all that, that's all good. All great. I think we can all earn a buck as needed. But that shouldn't be the end all goal. The end all goal should be supporting those communities to continue to have success so that all the other industries, right, are
Absolutely.
staffed by people that have skills and have a heart for the world.
Absolutely. And to my audience, this is an answer, Max. I always try to use this as an asynchronous tool for professional learning for education leaders, whether it be from the Education 500 world, startups, superintendents, district leaders. Max, that was an answer where my audience need to go back and play that to be able to identify what I like to say the micro strategies to come up with a macro method on how to move forward, whether it be from a product standpoint, product adoption, or whether it be from just product introduction and launch. The key that you stated, Max, and to my audience is that relationships are pivotal. We have to have the internal work to be able to support our communities to thrive and be in the community. Adaptive leadership, right? I think that's critical. I'm actually going to get that book shipped itself and systems, but we have to do the internal work. And I really love that. But Max, I want to expand upon this adaptive leadership because leaders across the country, they're facing quandaries rooted in access and opportunity that are multifaceted. Everything that we're trying to curtail, going back to your aforementioned answer with regards to immersing yourself in the community and relationships. Now, these challenges are being elevated by Max, what we talk about all the time, what we love, innovation and AI. These are additional factors that are playing into this compounded ecosystem where now multivariables have to be addressed in a strategic and intentional way. Now, Max, this is a two-part question for you. One, I want you to take this from the practitioner's lens. What are some ideas to address these compounding quandaries, specifically using innovation and AI to eradicate these access and opportunity gaps? First, that's your practitioner's hat. Take that hat off. Now, the second, from the edtech lens, how can companies and solutions deepen their product reach, as you were talking about, relationships, immersing themselves in the community, but a product reach to address these variables that are stifling progress in the education sector?
Yeah, so at the time of this recording, I think it's just been a day or so since Apple has announced Apple Intelligence, right? AI, it's an interesting play on words. So we're in this emerging field that is changing as we speak, right? As we're talking, AI is growing and burgeoning, and it's a very, very dynamic space. And so one of the things that I think we need to just acknowledge out of the gate is that K-12 is historically a lagging, you know, a latent industry, right? Where innovations oftentimes hit the K-12 sector much, much later than they've hit the, you know, the traditional market, right? And so what you end up with are consumers of technologies who then enter the K-12 realm and are oftentimes either inhibited or prohibited from using those same technologies because, hey, before those come into the space, we need to do all this due diligence, which again is needed and necessary because we're talking about children and you don't want to be beta testing any and all technology on kids before you've done some due diligence on what the potential impact could be. But that said, you have teachers And a lot of times, teachers are younger, right? Aging population. We can get into the conversation about the teacher pipeline shortages. My goodness, that keeps me up at night for sure. But there's some things we're doing about that. But if you think about young people who oftentimes are much more savvy when it comes to technology than some of us that are up there, as you mentioned, quarter century in the game, brother, right? Getting up there in the years. And so you create this really interesting mix where people are using technology, the AI and things for personal use, right? For whatever they're doing in their personal life. But in the K-12 space, it's like, well, how does that exist? Or can we port over some of those things, or is it different? And there's this friction, right? And at the same time, you have kids, from young kids to middle school kids to high school kids. Your high school kids are oftentimes using those same technologies. But then in the school space, like, well, this could be so much easier if I could just, right? My nieces and nephews give me this, right? They're older. My eldest is 22 years old now, so and we've got everything in between. And so when you listen to the young people tell it, right, they know what's out there, they know what's possible, but they don't have the wisdom. They don't have the wisdom to discern how, these products could be used more effectively, or how they ought to be used in ways that are detrimental. But what is the purpose of school? The purpose of school is to learn. And so what I would put out there is that organizations, companies, schools, K-12, all of us need to come together at the table with the students, with the young people, and just acknowledge that we have to figure this out together. It's not something that we can do alone. No one has all the answers, because the problems keep changing. They will continue to change at exponentially greater and greater rates. It's a long response to say, I think the solutions are in us working together, acknowledging what is, just calling us, acknowledge the elephant in the room, and working together to figure out ways to address it. There's some people that have been doing really innovative things though for years. I think my brother Jason Green comes to mind. He's got an organization, a company called, Your Way. He's been doing AI pre-COVID. All right. So he's been at the forefront. So I think tapping into people who have expertise like him is a way that leaders and companies both can work together to think about some of these issues that exist, and how might we overcome those issues. Gathering large data sets, data models, the way AI can just churn through data and quickly get to potential factors that we could address to overcome those historical challenges. Again, going back to savage inequalities, how might we help communities get over some of just the basic barriers, whether it's access to quality drinking water, whether it's access to facilities that provide the warmth or the heat or the cooling that help kids to learn in environments that are not adverse, and teachers to work in those same spaces.
Thanks, Max, for that. And Max, I got a sub question for this, but I really love what you said, how education is a latent industry. And I concur with that 100%, because it seems like this seismic shift that's needed isn't going at this accelerated rate that it needs to be in alignment to. The future of work and the future of the world, specifically in the AC stage of education. But I really loved how you intentionally added Generation Z and Generation Alpha, their voice, to be a part of solving the critical, or I should say, the multifaceted issues that we're facing in education. One thing to my audience, as Max was expanding upon integrating student voice into the solution or problem solution space. Think about this, Max. Generation Z, you were highlighting some of the kids in your family, but listen to this, right, Max? And I find this compelling. Generation Z, born in 1997 all the way up to 2010. Generation Alpha from 2011, 2024. Just the dynamic of the economy that they were born into. Automatically, they feel they need to be a part of the solution, in partnership with the adults, which I think is very compelling and profound, but needed because, again, they are our most important customers. I really love that. And now, Max, and this is where I want to be able to, this is another two-part sub-question. When you talk about this, when you were talking about how students need to be a part of the solution and there's that collective ideation, it references back to how our system is designed, the operating model. It's designed from this Fred Taylor approach of controlling demand. But now you're articulating that there needs to be a reverse process of Peter Drucker's work around dynamic work that incorporate multiple voices for the solution. A, Max, how do we create environments like that when our standard operating model is the complete antithesis of what we want to start moving towards, specifically to the two generations we're educating?
I'm again a big proponent of just truth telling. And
Yeah.
so, a lot of times we get into these quandaries of like, what should we do? And what do we, and we haven't just spoken truth to ourselves. We haven't just been honest with ourselves and just said, look, we don't have all the answers. We don't.
Right, right.
And it's okay. Thinking back to my days in the classroom, I was a traditional teacher at first, came out of college and I taught Spanish teacher in DC.
And
It's
to my audience, we got a Morehouse man right here. This is a Morehouse
Oh
man,
yeah.
so I gotta add that
For
in,
sure.
Max. I
For
gotta add
sure. For
that.
sure. You can always tell it more off me. You can't tell us much, but you can always tell, as they say. But listen, man, I found out years later, and this is years later from close friends of mine. I'm the goddaughter of their children, but they found out, man, they had bets on me because no Spanish teacher had lasted more than 2 weeks. This is a tough school. They were running teachers out of there left and right, but I lasted, if you want to call it lasting. Didn't know what I didn't know. Looking back, man, what I know now, I wish I'd be such a better teacher than what I was when I started. But I go back to those early days because, you're just trying to figure it out, and you think about, the kids and how you incorporate and get the kids involved in the conversations. And I'm a big fan of nothing about us without us. And
Yeah.
so if you're gonna go and say, I want to do something in this community, do something in this space, you have to involve the stakeholders, the ultimate stakeholders. And then we have to be honest with ourselves about what are the end goals? What are the things we all agree upon? Because if we're not starting from a common place of understanding and a common goal, then any solutions, any tactics we try to put in place are going to fall flat because we haven't involved the right stakeholders, the right people, and we haven't aligned on a North Star. Like, where are we heading? Where are we going? So I think that's some of the foundational work that needs to happen, is getting the right people into the room, especially the end all be all stakeholder, which are our children, and having their voice and having an understanding of what it is they need and what we're all trying to do. And then aligning that to, again, to a common North Star goal that we can get behind. And some of the best leaders that I've interacted with and come across in my tenure in education have been those leaders that can build those coalitions, bring people together, set a common vision, and then put the right people in the right seats on the bus so that you can move towards that goal.
Absolutely. And Max, really quick, and this is another second question, right? Because I love that practitioner-based answer. Now, this is going towards the ed tech companies, right? You had mentioned large data sets. And we know traditionally on the back end, psychometricians, software designers, AI engineers use these large data sets so that they can create the front-end experience for students. Max, we know that some of the data sets are very standardized, and when we think about clean data, right? That's the focus, clean data. But when we think about
Clean
clean
data
data,
in, clean answers out.
right. But we know that education is not as quote unquote clean, right? And when we start building assumptions for equity and to eliminate inequities for equity, and to be able to investigate and interrogate disparities much more, or I should say deeply, within these statistical models or models that they're training and they're building, is not going to be as clean. There's going to be immense noise because, again, this is the noise that students feel on the front end experience, right? The inequities and disparities. How do we now, if we're going to start developing these products, as you're saying, with regards to large data sets, and there's that truth telling that needs to happen in these rooms with these statisticians, with these psychometricians, with these software engineers. How do we tell the truth with regards to access, opportunity, eliminating inequities when the standard practice is to be able to build models that are clean, that eliminates the noise and the focuses on the statistical signals?
Good question. In my crash course in training, one of those PD weeks, I forget which year it was, getting back to school, pre-service week. But I remember there was a binder, and I was flipping through the binder, and there was on in the binder, one of the sections in the binder that we all handed was a one pager, and I forget who the quote was attributed to, but it was something to the effect of, about measurement and measuring data and getting data. And I'm going to butcher the quote, but it was something to the gist of it was everything that can be measured, everything that's easy to measure doesn't necessarily need to be measured,
Right,
right?
right, right,
Like
right.
it's so easy to measure and quantify anything. There's lots of data we can pull, but are we getting the right data? And
Yes.
what is the why behind the data that we're getting? It standardized testing, I'm not going to get into that whole thing right now on this call, but we can make tests that test for very specific discrete skills or test for very specific things. I don't always agree that we're measuring or testing for the right thing. There's certain things that can't be as easily quantitatively measured, and we oftentimes shy away from that because it can't be easily quantified. You can't easily gather a bunch of data and then start to parse it and chop it up. And the psychometricians of the world, God bless you, God bless us. We love numbers. Sometimes the love of numbers, the love of data can be a driving force in and of itself. Like, it's just getting, oh, it's beautiful. And I made this chart. I made that chart. How beautiful it is. And you wonder, like, man, humans have been around for, a little time. We've figured out a way to pass, on generationally, right? We figured out a way to get this far. We haven't always had these tests and these grades and these this and that, but for some reason in the past, couple of decades or so, we've decided, but that has to be the way. And I'm a big put. This is part of my what I do with consult. Like, let's slow it down a little bit. Can we just pump the brakes a little bit? Because in a world where so much can be measured, and now with AI and machine learning, and these visual, technologies, camera technologies that can like just analyze the world and make sense of it on demand and in real time, some of what we've done historically is not needed. So I think it's time to all take a collective pause to beat. That's what COVID did to all of us, right? It said, ha ha ha. Mother Nature said, ha, slow down. Mother Nature said, hey, world, slow it down. And we all had to
Absolutely.
take a pause. And that also was a driving force behind Think to Learn is like, look, I want to support communities' abilities despite whatever environmental factors, Mother Nature be Mother Naturing, as they say. Despite whatever environmental factors come and impact community, you're still going to be able to thrive in the face of that. We can't, I mean, yes, we can vote, we can do things, but like by and large, communities at large are oftentimes adversely impacted by geopolitical forces that are beyond their control. Even if you vote, there's things that happen outside the borders of our country that impact our communities. And so how might I be a support to those communities that in the face of Mother Nature, in the face of geopolitical forces that you may or may not be aligned with, you're still going to be equipped with the right relationships, the right technologies and tools and services that are going to help you to still see through all of that. That's what it's all about for me. That's what we're all about. So slowing it down, taking a beat, figuring out and deciding what is important for us to really look at, what data should we be considering, and the why behind it. Why are certain data points important? And then looking historically at persistent challenges through the data. What are the gaps? Who is the most marginalized? Who is the most impacted adversely by whatever? And if you're solution finding for that, all ships will rise, right? It's a tide that raises all boats. If you are looking in, this is my advice to all the companies, right? If you're trying to go into a space, you want to bring a product or service or tool, first go in, do the homework, figure out the historical data from that community, figure out who has been impacted, who's seen success and what has led to that success, who is not seeing success, what has held them back. Getting that understanding, asking for that, leaning into that, letting the community know that that's what you're trying to do. I think it's important for companies to tell schools in the district, like, hey, here's what we're about. Here's our mission. Here's our vision. Does that align with what you're trying to do?
Absolutely.
Our justly, our collective, we have an equity index. We have a rubric by
Yeah.
which we vet and evaluate certain companies, right? If they come in, oh my goodness, I have got the newest, latest Water bottle. Oh, it's gonna revolutionize education. These kids are gonna. It's gonna go. Hydration is key. Oh, okay. Okay, great. What do you know about da, 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 da? Oh, so if you're only thinking about coming in and peddling a ware or good, I don't begrudge you that. I'm not the right consultancy to help you do that, right? There's plenty of people out there. But if you have a heart for kids and you said, hey, kids need to be hydrated, they need to be able to like have the hydration they need so their brains are functioning so they can, learn in school. That's why we got into this. That's why we're worried about. Okay, that's a different message. That's a different message, right? Now let's help you craft that message so that school district understands. Because when they're making choices, they can choose between water bottle company A, water bottle company B. If they know the water company A has this mission, this heart, this focus, and it's coming into the community saying, this is why we do this, they're going to make a choice that's going to probably favor you than company B.
Profound,
So.
Max. Profound, profound, profound answer to my audience. That's another answer you want to play back asynchronously so that you can unwrap. I counted, and Max, here's my statistical mind. I counted about seven different strategies in the 65 seconds, because I was counting. I was writing
Uh-oh,
65 seconds. In the 65 seconds, you gave that wonderful answer. So to my audience, please play that back, because if I counted seven strategies that I could integrate as an ed tech leader, or even ideas from the ed leadership lens or vertical, please, that's an interface answer. But Max, I want to segue into another question,
well, can I pause
which is,
before you get to that question? I just want to point out then my takeaway is if I gave seven things in 65 seconds, I got to slow down. So my AI coach after this is probably going to give me a note like, Max, you spit out these seven things. It's not well received or not received, but coaching, slow it down.
Yes, I love it.
Like you
And it
said, like
goes,
when we get to rapid fire, brother, we get to rapid fire.
and that's why, Max, that's why our conversations, it just goes back and forth with that, right? Let's slow it down. But to my audience, you can slow it down because you have the controls now with AI and technology, right? Right, Max? But Max, I want to segue to this question, because the themes, right, explicit, implicit themes from your last answer flows nicely into this, right? We talked about how EdTech companies can establish relationships in the community and with the most important customers, right? Our families and our students. But now I want you to expand on relationship building between educational practitioners and leaders and EdTech experts and CEOs and companies, right? How do these two entities now, just focus in, just a laser light focus on just these two entities, how do they develop keyword authentic relationships where the EdTech company becomes a part of the learning organization's thread and community and the culture to achieve one goal, each and all?
That's another really good question. Let TikTok and social media tell it there's some research out there. I'm not gonna, I don't believe it's validated, but the point remains. The research out there about authenticity being, the most truly impactful quality. It's a great, stronger than love. Authenticity stronger than hate. Authenticity, this is buzz going around. I don't know if it's scientifically researcher based, but I think what's important is like authenticity does matter. It really does. And so you can't build authentic relationships if you're not authentic. I don't have the magic pill for that. I can't make someone be authentic. I can point out when you're not. I can point out, strategies and tactics that you're going to take, and I'm like, you can do that if you want to. Let me tell you how it's going to resonate, right? Oh, we're here's what, and this is not knocking anybody, but like you hear this from like multiple companies. That's like, we're going to send out this message. We're going to send out a campaign. We're going to e-blast 10,000 different emails we have. It's like, So it's late April, almost May. Average teacher might have just become a testing. Like, I don't, no one wants to hear your email. Like, don't do it, right? Don't do it. And that's just an example, right? Like, don't do something that is, if you don't understand the authentic experience of the folks that you're trying to impact, then you're not going to come across authentic. You're not going to be able to build a true relationship. You got to understand and come from a place of common understanding. So to that, I think one of the things companies need to do is make sure that you're hiring and you're staffing folks that understand and or come from the communities that you're trying to impact. And if you're small, a lot of the places are, these are great, brilliant people. with brilliant ideas, and they pursue it, and they go and they create a product or service. It's awesome. But because of that work, that really important work, they haven't had the time or they don't have the resources to kind of bring in the expertise. And so that's where organizations like mine can be that extension and to support them. But I think you have to do that. If you're going into if I'm gonna go into Vietnam, I know you were recently there earlier this year, then I'm not gonna send somebody from my company that has no understanding, no background in anything culturally related to Vietnam. If your only experiences have been in Washington, D.C., and you haven't done any due diligence, haven't know anything about the Vietnamese community, et cetera, then are you the person that should show up and have that meeting to explain what you're trying to do? Maybe not, right? Maybe find someone or look to hire someone, or at least develop the skills or a cultural understanding of that community before you go in trying to peddle a good or a ware. I just think it matters, right? Relationships matter. People are going to want to do business with people that they believe in. They're going to want to do business with people that understand what their plight. And that's an easy thing a business can do. Just do your homework, do your research, and or hire people that understand and have done that and lived it.
Absolutely, Max. I love that. One, authenticity matters, relationships matters. Really love the common understanding of understanding the communities, the want to impact and cultural understanding and research. Those are all critical pieces for success. I love your water bottle example as well. And to my audience, the two key phrases are authenticity matters and relationships matters. Wow, Matt's got to have you back for another one to start unpacking what those two mean. But want to get into a question that you and I feel personally driven towards and professionally driven towards, right? Because we've heard this in numerous of meetings that we've been in together, where edtech companies have asked you directly, and I love your response to this. This is why I put this in as a question for this episode, where I've seen multiple edtech companies ask you directly if certain features in their solution should be removed because of the highly politicized environment we're living in today. And I see your automatic reaction. Max, you have a great poker face, but when it comes to this, your poker face just is gone. I love your responses. But the level of polarization, Max, has led edtech companies to adjust their strategy because of the nature of the politics and the politicization that we're seeing in education. But Max, now this is blasted internationally, domestically, where I want people to hear your response to this. What advice can you give edtech companies
Oof.
and leaders about not compromising or exponentially shifting core features of their product despite the hyper-driven politics that we're facing in education?
Yeah, this is one of those questions that it burns me up because you're right. We have become just so polarized. And here's what's actually really interesting. When you do the history, we kind of dig into the history of K-12 and go, I'm talking going back not just decades, but the past century plus. You see patterns. You see a lot of similar patterns, right? You see pendulums swinging. You see some progress. You see some retraction. You see some progress. Well, I could consider progress. See some retraction. And I think we've kind of been lately in this kind of stage of what I would call retraction, where you have folks who are fired up, and I'm not knocking the energy, right? People are fired up for valid reasons. There are people who are energized and for reasons that they believe are truly valid. And a lot of that came to light because of COVID. Folks started to get a window into what was happening in the K-12 space because kids were doing school from home, from a laptop screen. And folks were all of a sudden paying greater attention to schooling of their children, which is a good thing in my opinion. But not everybody was excited with what they learned, what they saw. And some folks were like, yeah, been telling you, right? Like, been telling you, you just been paying attention. Like, it's tough out here for some folks. And so when companies come and say things like, hey, should we take a stance? Should we come out proactively and say something? Or should, or our product or service does this, should we tweak this feature, modify this feature, or change the way we market it or talk about it because of, you know, the forces that are out there? And this is where I get into those geopolitical forces and factors, right? And how can we support communities to thrive even despite that? So I'm very, very, I guess, firm on how I feel about this. And I tell companies that at the end of the day, the company, the CEOs and all the people that make the decisions, they have to be the ones that can look in the mirror where they go to bed at night or whatever and ask themselves, are they doing the work they set out to do? And if you set out to do work in the K-12 space, if you have a mission or a vision that is saying you want to make positive impact in the K-12 space, then you have to recognize that there are kids all over the space that are in school systems that are making decisions on the type of education those kids receive. And those decisions are not necessarily controlled by the kids, unfortunately. I think kids should have more say in what happens. And so one of the reasons we have that equity index and how we evaluate companies is because, you know, some of our categories are like, you know, equity, diversity within the company, cultural humility, social impact. There's a variety of factors. And this is our internal rubric because we want to know, like, are the people we're working with, are they internally doing the work? Are they doing the things at their company that we as spouses folks should be doing externally? And so if they're not doing their work internally, part of our consultancy is helping them if they're truly interested and getting ready, doing the work internally as a company so that you can show up to the K-12 space or the K-16 space, just the education space, global space, in ways that are more aligned with what you say your mission and vision is. And ideally aligned with the mission and vision of those school systems, or those LEAs. So I mean, I tell people point blank, like, you got to do what makes you, know, and aligns with your heart. That said, I would hope that the decisions are such that, you know, you will lean in towards the more equitable decision making. You will lean in towards, you know, just, I think it was a recent, I won't get into political stuff, but I heard a politician recently say, like, yeah, my state, we fed kids. Oh, the horror. Like, what are you talking about? Yes, we made free lunch, free meals for kids in schools. And like, why would anyone ever think that that's a bad thing to feed children, right? To feed our citizens. What? So, I was recently around Dr. Lavelle Brown, and him and Sheldon Berman wrote a book. I haven't dug into it yet. I just got a copy, just got, you know, got it signed. But it's called The Call to Courage. And the subtitle is Standing Up and Speaking Out Against the Assaults on Democracy, Educators, and Students in American Schools. And it's from what I've heard. I went to a session at AASA this past, I think it was February, and went to a session where they were talking about this book that was coming out. And I was just, yes, everyone in the audience was like, yes, we're tired of watching the political wrangling play on our screen. Our schools have become these battlegrounds of just noise. It's distracting from what we really are trying to do, which is teach kids. And so the book, from what I understand, lays out a lot of examples of how that's been happening, but also equips the reader with strategies and tactics to push past all that. And so I think there's again, that pendulum swing where people are starting to kind of fight back a little bit and say, look, all right, enough is enough. We've gone too far with the we're banning books. When historically has that ever? When is story like, come on, let's just look at history. We know burning of books has never played out well for the side that was doing the burning. It just hasn't. But why do we end up here? Like, how do we end up here where we're burning knowledge in a world where it's like the internet that doesn't work anymore, right? Also, like, it's not like, oh, let's burn the books, they'll never know what was in them. Let's
Oh,
ban them, we'll never know. Like, oh, we
man.
banned it. Like, stop, right? So I feel like we have to get back to sensibility and just common sense in a lot of ways. And so those coalitions, again, relate to people that are looking to say, at the end of the day, what are the things we all can agree on? Kids should not come to school and be hungry. You know, kids deserve quality facilities. Educators deserve quality tools and resources. Educators deserve their own training and professional learning so they can be the best teachers that they need to be. As these technologies continue to evolve rapidly, the way we teach has to change. It has to, because if we're still teaching the way we taught, we're preparing kids for our past, not for their future, right? That's old adage as well. I forget who said that one, but like, we cannot be teaching kids for the 20th century. We have to be teaching them in ways that It won't matter what technologies come. It won't matter what Mother Nature throws at us. It won't matter if COVID, the bumpteen, comes next. We're gonna be all right because we have the right people, we got the right tools, got the right connections and technology that are gonna help us see through this.
Absolutely. And Max, I'll tell you this, and I come at this from an objective lens, right? Recently I discovered that two books, right, were banned. And you know me, looking at this from an objective lens, and I'm stating to myself, how are these books banned? What type of content presents where there's either vulgar or content that's not conducive for the development of our students? The first book that was banned was Rosa Parks. I still don't understand how Rosa Parks made the banned list, right? Again, as a part of our natural history, I think that there's a lot of expanded vocabulary that can be taught on author's view, point of view, which is a critical anchor standard in the core standards. Main ideas and themes, but more importantly, the message that's being delivered, teaching our history. I really want to see where the contention points of Rosa Parks is. I don't understand.
So Michael, this is where I go more sinister. Oh, sorry, I got you. Keep going.
Oh,
Sorry.
no, sorry. Please respond to this. But the second book, second text, I now this threw me off, and not many things throw me off. I actually went back and read the book again to see where there's these contention points in the book. Maya Angelou's "I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings." Rosa Parks and Maya Angelou's work of "I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings" are on multiple banned lists in various states. I don't understand, right? There isn't critical race theory that's embedded in that. There isn't any contention points. It's just really outlining history, especially a biography of someone's life. I that's where I'm at, this level of dissonance. So even though it brings me to the level of dissonance that two of those books would be banned, Max, please help me expand on that. Like, wow, we're at that point where Rosa Parks and Maya Angelou's were. Can't be allowed in our schools.
So, listen, I was in my 40s. I'm still in my 40s, just whoever's reading, listening to this, depending on when you listen to this. I'm still in 40. It's like, hold on, wait.
We went back not old,
Back
brother.
in
We're
my
not old,
day,
not old.
in my day. Man, so many thoughts coming to mind. You say the cognitive, the dissonance, right, that you're dealing with, struggling with, it's not that complicated. When you do your history, and when I say you, what I mean, you're clearly a
Yeah.
historian, scholar, brilliant thought. When folks do the history and do the work, you realize, again, this is not new. These aren't new tactics, what have you. I think I was in undergrad before I knew who Claudette Colvin was, right? I didn't know who Claudette Colvin was, right? Well, oh, she was the person that wouldn't give her seat on the bus, but you didn't learn that. Why didn't I learn that? I could
Right.
have handled that. Why couldn't I have handled that information? Why was it Rosa Parks was the face and the voice of the boycott? I'll let the listeners, readers do their due diligence. Go dig into that.
Yeah.
That's erasure, right? That's
Absolutely.
erasure.
Absolutely.
And that's intentional, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
There are reasons why certain curriculum is chosen, adopted, approved, et cetera. There's reasons why we have these processes in place. So when you go and understand and look at the history behind why certain things are the way they are in K-12, it sheds light and it takes away some of the confusion. Oh, this is just what happens, right? Some folks might get upset about certain historical truths or certain information that they don't feel other kids should know. And, they want to shift it. I had a long drive recently, and so I just finished an audiobook. They Came for Our Schools, and it was written by let me do a quick Google. Mike Hixon-Ball is his name. I didn't want to mispronounce it. So They Came for Our Schools, and it kind of recounts some stuff that's going down in Texas, but the larger point remains is that, when folks get fired up about something, especially in the K-12 space, one of the strategies is to go and, utilize school boards as the way to wield power and control over what happened in that space. I think the book bans that were happening nationally were attributed to no more than, I think it was 11 individuals. Don't quote me on
Wow.
that, but that, I mean, you have to go and Google this. But like, actually, let me Google it right now for this. Book ban 11 people. There was 6 months ago I read this. Who's doing the book banning? A study by the Washington Post found that in 2021, 2022, just 11 people were responsible for filing 60% of book challenges. Now
Wow.
that's staggering. 11 individuals. And of those
That
11 individuals, not
I
even,
didn't
they
know.
weren't all parents. They didn't even all have kids in the school system, right? So I will clear up some of the confusion for you that a lot of what you're saying is intentional. It is well backed by. I'm not kind of getting the conspiracy theories or anything like that. This is facts, right? This is research data. A lot of what we're
Right.
seeing happening in the K-12 space lately is not driven by what students have asked for. It has been students saying, I've been to my library and I'm just, this knowledge that y'all have available to me, it's making me feel bad. It's making me feel real bad. Like, that's
Right.
not where it's coming from. 11 human, 11 people.
Right.
11
Wow.
people
And I
have
know.
had an outsized impact on what it is our kids can learn. How is that possible? Those are some, so that's a whole nother podcast, right, brother? But that's, we can dig into that, or you can get some experts on here who can really dig into those kind of conversations. So
Wow.
I'm, the more you know, the more you
Yeah.
learn. And this is where, again, I like to talk to companies and organizations because they don't know the history. They don't know the factors that are causing a cauldron of just contention
Yeah.
in our school systems. Then they're not going to be able to show up to help those communities to work through that. They're not going to help lower the temperature, lower the animosity between community members to say, look, hey, y'all, hold on, wait, whoa. Yes, there's some things that divide us, but let's just slow it down and let's look again to that North Star. What are the things we agree on? What do we agree? We agree that all our kids, we want to have a life that's better than what we had. But that's the whole point, right? Like, if you have kids, if you don't have kids, and my wife and I were childless by choice for many, many years, and the pandemic brought us our little bundle of joy, surprise. But like, we're working through it, right? But there are people who care about our society and know that, I believe that children are our future. So even when I didn't have kids, I was happy for my tax dollars to go to the public education system because I know that if my neighbors are smarter, if the people around me are smarter, if I go to the grocery store and the cashier is smarter, if I go to the in an airplane and the pilot is smarter, if they the better the educational experience for any and everybody, the better we are as a society. The worse
Absolutely.
off the educational experience for everybody, the worse off we are as a society. And I don't want to live in as a hermit. I don't want to live in a bubble where I'm scared to go out into the world because it's just madness out there. So to reduce the madness, I think it's important for us to ensure that people can think critically, that they can work and do things hand in hand with other people in the community, and that we can learn from that. And
Yeah.
then once we've learned from those things that we thought about and tried, let's repeat the cycle. Try something new. Let's think differently. Think more critically. Try something else. Learn from that. Rinse and repeat. What it's all about.
Absolute Max. Wow. Didn't know that. 11 people. 11 people. And again, going back to that essential question, right, is how does the published story of Maya Angelou present some level of shaming to a race? I had to go back and read that because that was one of my all-time favorite books. And I remember reading it in school, and it was really resonating with me because everybody knows how Maya Angelou's words are. It's poetic, it's aesthetic, it's just compelling on the multiple works that she's presented. But when I saw that make the ban list, I'm like, now we're
It's
it's
about erasure,
presented.
but
Yeah.
here's the thing. I don't know. So again, I'm kind of a techie nerd, but do you know who Marcus Brownlee is?
Absolutely.
He's brilliant brother, super smart. I was watching one of his YouTube video about him the other day, and it was somebody was interviewing him, like about his rise. He was a kid doing product reviews and things, and now he's like, if he endorses it, if he says does a product review, it sells like hotcakes. But he was being asked like, hey, which companies do? Should they keep certain features in, or should they basically what were you asking earlier, right? Like, should we do the thing that might be controversial? And his response was something to the effect of like, look, you gotta lean in on what you believe is right. And at the end of the day, if you do what you know is right, then the rest will work itself out, right? The business will come. And I remember president of a company I used to work at, one of his old adages was do well by doing good, right? If we do good, we do the right thing for folks, we're going to do well. And I believe that in my heart of hearts. I believe if you do right by people, the blessings will flow. Believe
Absolutely.
abundance out here, brother.
I'll tell you this, Max. This can be a 2-hour segment right here on this question. So I gotta get you back. This is gonna be an encore. This is gonna be an encore for
Okay.
Mr. Max Brooks, my brother. He's gonna be here. But last question now, Max. It's gonna be hard for you because you only can answer this question in 3 words. I'm gonna limit you to 3 words. Now, everybody else, they create their own innovative variation of this question, but again, I'm going to try or attempt to limit you to 3 words, but what 3 words do you want our audience to leave with regarding testing and implementing innovative solutions for excellence and equity in the AC stage of education?
I think, well, I'd be remiss if I didn't use these 3 words. This is my advice. Think
I do
and do,
it.
and together we'll learn.
I love Max.
That was a softball. That
Expand.
was a softball question.
That really was, right? And you know what, Max? When I was developing this question, I was like, I guarantee my brother gonna say thank you, learn. I was like, that's what I would say. And then I'm laughing because I predicted it, right? Just expand on that. Thank do learn for this question
I'd be a
around.
terrible CEO if I didn't. If I didn't use those three, I'd be a terrible CEO. But yeah, a lot of words come to mind, but at the end of the day, that's what it's all about for me.
Absolutely. Thank, do, learn. Max Brooks, you made it through the hot seat for VFB. Well, I tell you, I'm letting my audience know we're coming back for part two with you because we got to expand
I'm
on
ready.
a couple of the questions. But during the interim, if my audience or anybody wants to be able to reach out to you, contact you, look for consultation services or just, aligning their products to the equity index that we're incorporating and implementing, how would they be able to get in contact with you?
Hey, easiest way is through my site, thinkdolearn.org. Socials, I mean, I guess I was on the Twitter. I've kind of get into the whole X thing, but I'm on LinkedIn, Max Brooks. You can check me out. LinkedIn, or site, easiest ways to get in touch.
Max Brooks, thank you for coming on BFB, brother.
Thanks for having me, brother. I appreciate you. Keep doing the
This
good
was
work,
great.
man.
I appreciate you. And on that note, onward and upward, everybody. Have a good evening.